It's Hometown Alaska. I'm Charles Wolforth. Our topic today is the refugee situation. I don't know if it's really a crisis in the United States, but it's certainly a crisis in Europe as huge numbers of refugees leave Syria looking for a safe place to live. On top of that, there's a terrible series of bombings and shootings in Paris. People are very worried about our security. At the same time, Anchorage has really become a town of high immigrant population. So many languages spoken in our schools and some real celebration of the diversity we have. So how do we feel about this? How do we feel about this combination of what we're seeing in the national and international news about refugees and potential threat of terrorism and our own values here in Anchorage of being a community that's been fairly welcoming for immigrants and for different points of view? That's our topic today on Hometown Alaska, and I've got two very highly qualified guests to talk about it here in the studio with different points of view. Peter Goldberg is the chair of the Alaska Republican Party, and he's a retired U.S. Army colonel who worked in intelligence. Thanks for being with us, Mr. Goldberg. Peter?
It's my pleasure to be here today, Charles.
And Margaret Stock is an attorney with the Cascadia Cross Border Law Group. She works with immigrants. She's also a colonel, a retired lieutenant colonel, and was a special advisor for the Special Operations Command, which means that you were kind of working in this whole area of security.
Yes.
Margaret, let's start with you. I would like to get sort of a sense of what Anchorage's role is in the sort of the refugee picture. I did invite Catholic Social Services to join us on today's show. They're the official agency for settling refugees in Anchorage. They declined to attend. They are concerned about the sort of the tenor of the debate that's going on in this issue right now. So I'm really glad you could be here. One piece of information I did get is that we don't have any Syrian refugees coming to Anchorage this year or next. So in a sense, we're not facing a Syrian refugee situation. I wonder if you could sort of summarize for us, though, how refugees sort of come into our country and how they might show up in Anchorage.
Absolutely. And I want to thank you for inviting me to be on the show today. I do work with a fair number of refugees, although most of the folks I work with immigrated to the United States a long time ago. They came to Anchorage many, many years ago as refugees, and they're here now. In fact, many of them have become American citizens. They'll be voting for president in the next election cycle. And it's really interesting to see the welcome that Anchorage has given them over the years. We took in a lot of Muslim refugees during the Balkans conflict more than 10 years ago, and those folks have now gotten permanent residence and American citizenship. And they are contributing to our community in great numbers and doing well, running businesses and participating in all of the activities any other Anchorageite would participate in.
So how does that system work? How do they end up in Anchorage? I mean, if they're coming from the Balkans or from wherever else?
Well, it's a very complicated process. And I should at the outset say last year, Anchorage or Alaska only took in less than 150 people.
Oh, wow.
This is a drop in the bucket. There's a global refugee crisis going on as a result of numerous conflicts around the world. Right now, the numbers of refugees worldwide are the highest ever historically. It's worse than World War II. More than 50 million people have been forced from their homes as refugees around the world.
Wow.
The United States doesn't take very many of these folks at all. We've taken less than 100,000 typically in a year. President Obama has actually reduced the numbers over his predecessor, and we were looking at about 85,000. And again, we're talking 50 million people worldwide on the move. Maybe the United States may take 85,000 in a year.
So is the small number we get in Anchorage, is that based on a per capita for the size of our state?
To some extent. It's a judgment call by the refugee agencies as to how many people can be suitably placed in Anchorage. And of course, refugees are expected to support themselves. You know, they're given an initial help from the government, but they're expected to get jobs and integrate into the community and eventually get green cards and become American citizens. The idea is that they're going to be resettled successfully away from the place that they were forced out of. And so they're going to eventually become part of our community. And so the government looks at whether they'll be integrated properly into the community. Are there resources available that will help them integrate? We don't want to leave people in some location where they're never going to become part of our society.
I see. And so Catholic Social Services is essentially a contractor for the government to assist with that integration?
Yes, and I think it's important to go through the steps because I think there's been a lot of misinformation out there about how refugees get here. So,
and we have a whole hour, but we can do a quick summary, and then I want to let Mr. Goldberg get in here too.
Absolutely, sure. Uh-huh. Well, refugees actually get screened more than anybody else who comes to the United States from a foreign country. They go through a multi-step, multi-agency process. It takes several years. They go through security checks, lots of them. The Department of Defense is actually involved in this. DOD, for example, oversees when there's a terrorism incident, will pick up evidence at a terrorist site and put that into a big database, including things like fingerprints, and all the refugees get checked against that to see if they were participating in it. They get personal interviews, which is something that doesn't happen to most Europeans who come over here on an airplane. Mm-hmm. They don't get personally interviewed by anybody before they get here. So the refugees go through a thorough vetting process. And I think the thing people don't realize is that a long time ago, people in the security field became concerned that terrorists from other countries might want to come to the U.S. and do us harm. And they thought the refugee system might be a way that people might try to do that. This more than 20 years ago, this became an idea that people had. And so over the years, the system has been stepped up for screening people to try to make sure that there's absolutely no chance somebody coming over as a refugee is going to be coming with the intent to do us harm.
Right.
And so as a result, our vulnerabilities are actually in other places. And people are right to be worried about the threat of the Islamic State. They are definitely trying to attack us. But
and let's get into that.
They're
more,
having a hard time using the refugee system to do that.
I want to get my other guest on with us. That was Margaret Stock, who's an attorney, works with immigrants and refugees. Peter Goldberg is a chair of the Alaska Republican Party. And I thought of inviting you because I read your column in the Alaska Dispatch where you expressed some concerns about the refugees coming from Syria and the threat of terrorism that we face. And I'd like to hear your concerns.
Well, first of all, again, thank you for bringing me on. This is a subject that really struck me as quite important when the issue was raised. And also, my personal focus is more national than just Alaska. Mm-hmm. I guess that's because of all the time I had in the military. I tend to focus there. Margaret is absolutely right that there's a great effort put into vetting people before they come here. My concern is that it is not an adequate system. I certainly don't doubt for a moment the professionalism of all the people working to keep the unwanted refugees from coming here. They're going to do the best they can. But there are things that they can't do. Granted, yes, if we have fingerprints of people, it's going to go into a database. I'm not concerned about the fingerprints that are in the database. I'm concerned about the fingerprints that aren't in the database. There is no way that our security agencies can collect the fingerprints of everyone that's a potential jihadist that might want to come to our country. To suggest we can is like taking your trout rod and going over the Alaska Club and throwing it in the swimming pool and expecting to get a trout. We're not going to get it.
In other words, a terrorist will manipulate the system or avoid those parts of the system that would catch them.
Well, I think it's fair to say that there's probably a lot more radical Islamic people that would like to commit jihad against the United States that just don't exist in any of our databases. And that's why we're not going to find them if we do any checks of those databases.
Okay. So what would you like to see done in terms of improving that system? Or is the solution just to simply say those countries we won't take refugees from?
Well, at least in the short term, yes, that second. That, you know, we just absolutely have to say no. And I know that's hard on those families, individuals that legitimately want to come here. And my heart does ache for them. And I'm all for sending humanitarian aid in that direction. But I am concerned about that very tiny percentage that might be able to slip through the cracks and come to our shores. We know, for example, that one of the persons who blew themselves up in that soccer stadium came there as an alleged refugee. Well, I'm not sure he came there as a refugee. I believe he may have come there as a jihadist. I don't want to let people like that through. And if it means that some people that are legitimately seeking a better life can't make it, then so be it.
Mm-hmm. So I guess the first thing that comes to mind is, well, lots of people are coming to our country all the time, but they're in databases, they have fingerprints, they're sort of vouched for. So that's the difference between the refugees who might not be. Is that where you're coming from?
Well, I don't know that we have databases on everyone from mm-hmm. every country. Mm-hmm. I mean, like Marcus said, there's a massive movement to people that are refugees, or at least claim to be refugees. We know that some of the people that are showing up in Europe aren't there because they're real refugees. They're looking to come there for better jobs.
Mm-hmm. But, I mean, Syria sounds like hell on earth at this point. So probably a lot of those people are just trying to get away from a very bad situation.
And that's probably true for many of them, not mm-hmm. just the Muslims, but certainly the Christians and the Jews, too, because mm-hmm. they deal with even more difficult issues of prejudice and anti-Semitism in the Jews' case, or anti-Christianity. Mm-hmm. But there's plenty of geographical space where these people can go in many of the countries in that area. And I strongly believe that we can help with the existing camps that are there. We can help set up other camps. We can use our power as a nation to negotiate with some countries that are not yet taking refugees, that are Islamic countries, and offer to provide whatever support may be needed. Because I think many of these people really don't want to leave home. They just want home stable so that they can go back.
So do you see like a sort of a system where you'd send Muslim refugees to Muslim countries and Christian refugees to more Christian countries? Or, I mean, do you see that splitting them up in that way?
Well, it's my understanding, maybe Margaret can correct me, that historically one of the questions that we do ask people is what their religion is as part of our vetting process. And I believe that, you know, just common sense tells me, a Christian person would be more comfortable in a country predominantly Christian. A Muslim would be more comfortable in a country predominantly Muslim, and that would be true for Buddhist or Sikh or Jewish or anything else.
So you give them that choice, you're saying, or screen them into those?
Well, we only have the choice as far as who comes into our country. I can't answer for the other mm-hmm. 160 or so countries in the world.
Would you have additional screening for Muslims as opposed to other religions? Or do you, I mean, because I think that's something that one of the presidential candidates has said, is that Muslims stay out, but other religions could come in.
I think that there might be circumstances where that would be true, but not necessarily all. For example, In my article that you read, you may have noticed that I was the J2 in Kosovo. And for the listeners, the J2 is the intelligence officer. And so I was a senior intelligence officer for NATO over there in Kosovo. And Kosovo right now is probably about 90% Muslim. But it's incredibly secular. I would not be nearly as concerned about Muslims coming from Kosovo as I would be from Syria. But I'm not personally familiar with every particular Muslim group, Shia and Shia and Sunni around the world. I'd be more concerned right now about Iran and Syria. Wouldn't be very concerned at all about Kosovo. Probably be less concerned from my limited knowledge about Jordan and Lebanon.
Okay, so you've got the topic today, listeners, and we welcome your involvement in the show. I'm going to give the phone numbers in just a moment. But I want to tell you again that our guests are Peter Goldberg, who you just heard from, who's the chairman of the Alaska Republican Party, and Margaret Stock, who's an attorney with the Cascadia Cross Border Law Group, who works with refugees and immigrants. If you'd like to get on the show with us, the phone number here is 550-8433, 550-8433. Outside Anchorage, it's 888-353-5752. And the email address is hometown@alaskapublic.org. Let's take on this hot issue of religion and screening, sending people to different places depending on their religion and what country they're coming from. Margaret, can you respond to that? Is that part of our system? Should it be part of our system?
It shouldn't be part of our system to say that people from a particular religion can't come to the United States. That's not our values. We've always been a diverse society that's welcomed people of all faiths. It also doesn't make sense from a security perspective to say that's buying into the ISIS theme that Muslims can't live with anybody else and have to be kept in a separate caliphate and so forth and so on. We have had Muslims immigrating to the United States for hundreds of years. We haven't had a problem with that. Granted, the numbers have been relatively small, but we've had thousands of soldiers serving our United States military who are Muslim. Some of them lost their lives in Iraq, battling. They're buried in Arlington National Cemetery. To say that we're not going to take people into our country because of their religion represents a fundamental shift in American values and a rejection of our founding values, Declaration of Independence, mm-hmm. the Constitution, and the Alaska Constitution, frankly, which has a protection clause in it about creed, that we respect people of all creeds. We haven't made that distinction, no.
Peter, would you respond to that?
I just want to make it clear. I was not suggesting that we should prohibit all Muslims from coming to the United States. In fact, I specifically said I'm totally comfortable with them coming from Kosovo, probably Lebanon, Jordan. Indonesia is another place that's predominantly Muslim that I wouldn't have much of a problem with. But I think at least at this time in the world history, where there is a large numbers of radical Islamists, that we should be a little bit more careful about taking people from the countries where it's strongest. We know that there's a lot of hate for the United States and Iran. I'd be uncomfortable bringing the average Muslim from Iran. I'm also very uncomfortable, from more than one perspective, bringing the average Muslim from Syria, not just because of ISIS. Even though I don't practice Judaism now, my last name would suggest that I'm Jewish, and I was born Jewish. We also know that Syria, generally speaking, has been incredibly anti-Semitic. And we could go through, and I've brought some material with me to demonstrate that if I needed to. But as a person of Jewish background, something that's still important to me, I would be concerned about having people come over here that hate Jews.
Right. All right. Well, we've motivated our callers to get involved. So let's hear what some of them have to say. Ryan is calling from Anchorage. Ryan?
Yes.
What did you have a question or comment?
I did. I was wondering for Mr. Goldberg, why all the focus on refugees when it seems like so many people have openly stated that the visa waiver program represents a much greater threat? I mean, I think that the chair of the Senate Select Intelligence Committee, Richard Burr, has stated that. So why focus on refugees first?
So let's define the visa waiver program. This is a program that affects a lot of countries that where visitors can come to the United States without getting a visa, and they can sort of just show their passport to enter the United States. Did you want to respond to that, Peter?
Oh, I suppose I could. The reason we're concentrating on refugees today is primarily because that's the reason we were asked to come here. There are other issues going on in our country, and I think this visa waiver program is one that probably needs looking at. I think I've heard sometime in the last few days that it is being looked at and that the number of people from different places that can come here is going to be reduced, to that there will be a little bit less wavering of visas, and that may be needed, yes.
Margaret?
Sure. Well, the fact is the Paris attacks were mainly carried out by Belgian and French citizens, and there's no proof yet that anybody who was a, quote, refugee was involved in it. Mm-hmm. But the Belgians and the French are allowed to get on an airplane and fly to the United States on a passport. And, of course, we have their fingerprints and we have their photos, but that doesn't prevent doesn't give us global knowledge of their motives when somebody gets on a plane and come over here. The other problem is the biggest threat right now inside the United States is actually people getting radicalized over the internet. And we've had cases like that in Alaska. We had a federal employee and a former military veteran, Paul Rockwood Jr. You might have remember his name out in King Salmon, Alaska. He was working for the federal government, got radicalized over the internet, and was convicted in the last couple of years of terrorism-related charge. And that's the biggest threat. People seem to focus on trying to figure out who's going to attack us before they get here, but the vast majority of people who seem to be trying to attack us right now are people who are already here and are getting radicalized over the internet by Islamic jihadists who are on the internet actively trolling for disaffected young people they can convert to their grand design and scheme and encourage to attack their fellow Americans.
Right. That's one of the weirdest and most incomprehensible parts of this whole thing.
Yeah. It is. And I'm not going to dispute what Mark is saying. In fact, I have an article in front of me from Politico that talks about exactly that, that there's at least 250 Americans that have attempted to travel to Syria in order to join ISIS. And there's at least 900 active probes going on against Islamic State supporters in every state.
Yeah. Wow.
So Mark is perfectly correct there. That probably is a bigger issue.
Ryan, do you feel like the waiver program should be done away with, or were you just asking the question?
I was mainly asking the question, and while Mr. Goldberg's response was elegant, it did seem like a deflection. I guess I would rephrase it in such that why are so many Republicans focused so primarily on the refugee program rather than the visa waiver program? But I appreciate his response nonetheless.
All right. Let's go on to Bill, who's calling from Anchorage. Bill?
Hey, good afternoon. Good to hear all your voices. Listen, I have to say that I'm pretty horrified that in 2015, you know, and I started school, you know, the year after Martin Luther King was assassinated. I cannot believe in 2015 that I have to turn on my radio and I hear such hatred and racism and bigotry coming from someone from a major political party. I don't know how this became acceptable. First point. The second point is I'm a little bit disappointed because on one hand we have someone who is an expert on the refugee question and assimilation into our society and how the state of Alaska and Anchorage in particular boards refugees and integrates them into society. And on the other hand, we have a political figure who's quoting things that he's read on the internet. And I wish that we had two informed people rather than one person who was well-versed and another who was just quoting their gut feeling, which is just so hateful and bigoted. Right. And I'm very disappointed in you, Mr. Goldberg.
All right. Thanks, Bill. I mean, I want to say that I invited Mr. Goldberg here. That's why he's here. He is the chair of the party, but he also has experience in intelligence as an Army colonel. Peter, did you want to respond to the rest of Bill's remarks?
I most certainly do. To suggest that I hate Muslims or any group of people is absolutely absurd. I work with Muslim people in many different countries. I've had them work for me. When I was in Kosovo for a year, again, 90% ethnically Muslim place. I had people from Turkey working for me, good men all. My best friend in Kosovo in particular was a guy named Ramush Haradinaj. At the time I met him, it was a 4th of July party at the United Nations mission or the American mission in Kosovo. As it turns out, Ramush Haradinaj became the prime minister of Kosovo shortly thereafter. And I would go over to his home for dinner with he and his wife. And he was a great man. But I've also worked with Muslims or visited with Muslims in Egypt, in Turkey, in Jordan. I've met a lot of Muslims and dealt business-wise with Muslims that are in the Muslim sectors of Jerusalem. I don't care what color a person is. I don't care what their religion is. I don't care what their ethnic background is or what country they came from. Shoot, I grew up in Brooklyn, New York. That was about as diverse a place as you could get. It was not a breeding ground for racism or anything like that because everybody was just another person to us.
Right. Thanks. And I think Margaret wanted to get in on this conversation.
Yeah, I just wanted to mention to listeners that from a security perspective, we actually need to recruit people from the regions of the world that have these conflicts going on. That's how we win wars, is we recruit people. When we were fighting the Germans in World War I, we recruited German refugees, put them in uniform, sent them back. Why? Because they understood the language and the culture. They can make us more effective on the battlefield. Same thing during the Cold War. We didn't refuse to take refugees from Stalin and Khrushchev and so forth. In fact, we welcomed them because they could join our military. We even had a specific law that allowed refugees from Eastern Europe who were willing to fight against the former Soviet Union to join our military and fight against them. Today, Special Operations Command welcomes Muslim recruits, especially Iranians. Peter mentioned he doesn't want to have Iranians come into the United States. The Iranian-American community has been tremendously helpful from an intelligence perspective. The great power of the United States has been this idea expressed in the Declaration of Independence that we welcome people of all faiths, of all creeds. We became a superpower because we welcome people from all parts of the globe. And we've won our conflicts overseas by using the power of people who share our ideals, who believe in America as a welcoming melting pot, and using that to prevail against our enemies. We need to do the same thing here. Most of the plots, the extremist plots in America, have been disrupted by Muslims who told the authorities about somebody who is trying to plot something bad, and I'd be more than happy to tell you about specific incidents if you're interested.
I guess what I want to say is that sort of as the moderator of our conversation is that, that it's possible to have disagreements on something like this without using what's become one of the most serious epithets or accusations in our society, which is to call somebody a racist. So, I mean, to have a concern that people of a certain religion to coming from a certain country might be more likely to be terrorists. I don't think that's ruled out of our discussion. I think it's a valid point for Peter to raise. I might not agree with it, but I just in terms of like, does that mean that, you know, that's racist and you can't talk about it? I guess in this forum, I think it's a thing to talk about. And we invited Peter here to do that.
And, you know, I've got to be clear. I'm not saying that by virtue of coming from Iran and by virtue of being a Muslim from Iran, that the person is bad. I'm saying that there are some countries where we need to be more careful than other countries. And Iran, given some of, you know, recent history, I am more concerned about Iran. That certainly does not mean that every Muslim or every individual from Iran or any other country is a bad person. I'm concerned about that tiny percentage that that is a potential threat.
Understand.
And Margaret's right. In the military in particular and some of our other federal agencies, we do need people that are willing to work for our country and help us understand their culture, their politics, act as interpreters. There's a whole variety of roles. And I know from the presentation Margaret gave a year or two ago that some of these people who enter our military tend to do better than our own homegrown white Anglo-Saxon Protestant recruits. There's a potential great amount of wealth. But right now, I'm concerned about separating the wheat from the chaff, and I don't know that we can really effectively do that in all situations.
Right. We need to keep moving on. So we're going to turn to Nick now, who's calling from Palmer. Nick?
Hi. I just wanted to say keep hearing people refer to Syria. We can't allow Syrians in, and Syria is an absolute hellhole. But I think, as Margaret and other people have pointed out, what the country of origin has nothing to do with the person's intent. ISIS is recruiting people from the United States, from Britain, from all over the world. And if we kept every Syrian out of the country, that would do nothing to protect us from ISIS. That's my only comment. Thank you.
All right. Now let's go to Earl, who's calling from Anchorage. Earl?
Hi. My comment is basically I'm really sad to see this fear that's being raised against immigrants and refugees. I mean, I've been to Syria. I was there before 9/11. It was one of the most beautiful countries, and the people were absolutely astoundingly wonderful. I've been to numerous places in the Middle East. I'm not afraid of refugees or any immigrants.
I'm sorry, Earl, you're breaking up. We can't understand what you're saying. I think we're going to drop that call. We just couldn't hear him. I just wanted to we're going to go to break and hear in a minute. But this is a question I wanted to give to our guests, and we can talk about it more in the second half as well. I come to this from I actually lost a family member in September 11th in the World Trade Center, so I'm very aware of this sort of the security risk. On the other hand, it seems like our country has changed a lot in the last 15 years. We've made a lot of compromises because of concerns about security, and I wonder. And it's not an original thought, obviously, but I wonder to what extent we give too much to the terrorists when we do that. And I'll turn to you with this first, Peter. I mean, when we take off our shoes at the airport, when we sort of have the NSA recording everybody's or taking everybody's metadata on their phone calls, it seems like we lose a little bit of freedom, and we kind of add a more stickiness to our society and they win with that. And at some point, I just wonder, should we sort of be the home of the brave and stand up and say, well, you know, bring it on. You know, we're not going to change our way of life. How do you respond to those thoughts?
Well, generally, I think you're on the right track. I think I was listening to Michael Medved earlier today, and he was talking about the fact that there were some menorah lighting ceremonies that were being canceled out of fear. And I think that's totally inappropriate. We are supposed to be a land of freedom, and I think we should go ahead and have those menorah lighting ceremonies. I think it's okay to have a Christmas tree lighting ceremony and say to the terrorists, we're not going to be intimidated by you. And when I say terrorists, that includes the homegrown terrorists. I'm not picking on any particular country there. But to say to the terrorists, wherever they're from and whatever their twisted ideology might be, we're not going to put up with that.
Mm-hmm. Margaret?
Well, I think it should be obvious if you look at the historical perspective on these things that the terrorists can't win with conventional military forces. They cannot mount enough bombers and aircraft carriers and ground forces and everything to attack the United States. So the way they want to attack us is they want to make us afraid. And they want to make everybody in America totally afraid so that they don't want to travel and they don't want any foreigners in their country. And if we do that, then the terrorists win. And that's their weapon, is fear. That's what they want us to do. So they want us to overreact. In fact, one of the things that was interesting to me in the post-9/11 era was to read their plans for how they're going to overthrow the United States, which is they're basically going to bankrupt us, cause us to spend so much money on security that we no longer have enough money to do anything because we're, you know, the joke in the intelligence community was everybody was either going to be working for the government or locked up by the government eventually. And we turn into this super surveillance security state, which we can't sustain, and it won't stop them anyway. And so there's always, I think it's important to articulate that security isn't just about walls. It isn't just about keeping people out. It's about maintaining our values as a country. If we're secure in our own values and we believe in them, we're going to be far safer than if we try to turn ourselves into some sort of bureaucratic surveillance state that, you know, we're so afraid of our shadow that everything has to be checked constantly and we're spending so much money on it that we end up tanking our economy.
All right. So there, a good point of common ground there to some extent anyway. It's a good discussion, and I want to welcome more listeners to weigh in because I think this is a really interesting topic to measure our values and how we feel about the way Alaska and the United States has its role in the world and how we feel like we want to deal with security and deal with terrorism. So I'm going to give out the phone number as soon as we take a quick break. But first, I want to tell you that this is Hometown Alaska. I'm Charles Wolforth. My guests today are Peter Goldberg, who is the chair of the Alaska Republican Party, and Margaret Stock, who is an immigration attorney with the Cascadia Cross Border Law Group. Please stick with us as Hometown Alaska continues.
You're listening to Hometown Alaska from Alaska Public Media. The program repeats tonight at 8 p.m. on KSKA Anchorage and will not be taking phone calls. You can find Hometown Alaska on iTunes or listen at alaskapublic.org.
It's Hometown Alaska. I'm Charles Wolforth, and our topic today is refugees, the process for how they come to the United States, and Alaska's role and values in terms of looking out to the world and all the different nationalities and risks and benefits of having folks from different countries come here. We have two guests in the studio, Peter Goldberg, who's the chair of the Alaska Republican Party, and Margaret Stock, who's an attorney with the Cascadia Cross Border Law Group, who works with immigrants and refugees, both veterans, Peter, a retired U.S. Army colonel, and Margaret, a retired lieutenant colonel, and both with experience in terms of intelligence and working overseas with these kinds of threats. So really, really a good all-star panel today. We'd love to hear from you, your thoughts about Anchorage's role in dealing with refugees and immigrants. Maybe you'd like to see more of them come. I think everybody's heart was broken when we saw that picture of that little boy in who dead on the beach in the Syrian early in the Syrian refugee crisis. Or maybe you're concerned about this, our safety, and the fact that we want to think of our own people first and make sure that we don't face more terrorism attacks. So if you'd like to get on the air with us, the number here is 550-8433, 550-8433. Outside Anchorage, the number is 888-353-5752. And the email is hometown@alaskapublic.org. My guest, Margaret Stock, is going to be appearing on December 4th, that's this coming Friday, at noon at the Anchorage Hilton Hotel for a panel discussion about the experiences of refugees arriving in Alaska and becoming part of our community. Jessica Kovarik, the program director and state refugee coordinator at Refugee Assistance and Immigration Services, which is part of Catholic Social Services, will also be on the panel. And I want to say again, we did invite Catholic Social Services to participate in today's show, but they declined. Margaret, you were earlier trying to give us some information in terms of what are the steps that refugees go through. And I don't think we want to take up the whole half hour. It sounds like we could probably take a lot of time on it. But do you want to go through those steps in terms of how they're reviewed or how they end up here, essentially?
Sure, absolutely. I think it's important because there's been a lot of misinformation out there about this, but it's a multi-year process. It typically takes a couple of years before a refugee starts the process and actually makes it into Alaska at the end of it. It's
so
also
this
somewhat
is before
random.
They even get come to Alaska.
Yeah, before All they right. even come here, they go through months and months and months and even years and years of processing. So overseas, I should mention, by the way, that we're in a completely different situation from Europe. Europe has a land border with the Middle East. And
people are just flooding in.
People are just flooding in.
Right.
And we don't have that problem. The refugees coming to our border are from the three bad countries in Central America. And we detain those folks when they walk up to the border and we claim asylum. We put them in jail. But a refugee coming to us as a refugee from overseas goes through this multi-step process that starts with the UN High Commissioner for Refugees identifying them as somebody who has a well-founded fear of persecution on account of their race, religion, nationality, membership in a particular social group or political opinion. Then they're referred to the U.S. The U.S. doesn't have to accept them. And the U.S., again, only takes a very small number compared to our population, over 322 million people, and we take less than 85,000 currently from the whole world.
From all different countries.
Right. And okay. There's no guarantee you'll get referred to the U.S. So it's like a lottery. You know, you might get the U.S., you might end up with Indonesia, you might end up with Sweden, you might end up...
Is it actually a lottery?
Pretty much, yeah.
Wow.
I mean, it's not a physical lottery, mm-hmm. like people don't enter it, but you can't be sure that you're going to get the United States. You know, that's something the United States decides whether you get to come or not. So you're referred to the U.S. by the United Nations, this person might be a good fit, and sometimes they'll take into account whether you already have relatives here or you're from a group that the U.S. has traditionally resettled.
Mm-hmm.
Then you get interviewed extensively. You go through a security clearance process that includes the Department of Homeland Security and the Department of Defense. And it's not just fingerprints. It's also all kinds of information, name information. We have these maps now of who's related to whom. And, you know, we run all that data and try to pick up whether somebody knew somebody else, travel patterns, that sort of thing. The State Department runs everybody through a special check starting in 2008. They applied that to all refugees, so they go through enhanced security screening. Then there's an additional security review for certain kinds of refugees called a security advisory opinion, and this is the subject actually of a lot of complaints because it's not very transparent, and if there's any doubt at all that somebody might cause harm to the United States, they don't get through that process. So,
wow, you just on the first page. So
yeah,
we'll have to ask you to speed it up a little
more
bit.
More of it, and then an in-person interview, and this is the Department of Homeland Security.
Mm-hmm.
This is all done overseas. DHS has to approve people to come to the United States. There's medical screening, then they're matched with a sponsor agency, a cultural orientation, and then once again, when they get to the United States, they're screened again at the border, and if there's any doubt at all, they're turned away. Once they're admitted to the United States, they're usually sent to a specific place, and that's where Catholic Social Services comes in. They might be told that we're getting a refugee from Nepal. Last year, we got one refugee from Nepal, and so I don't know who that person was, but presumably Catholic Social Services had somebody who met that person at the airport when they flew into Anchorage, and they were provided with different social services so they could get resettled in Anchorage for the short period of time when they aren't expected to get a job. They basically have to get a job right away and start supporting themselves.
Okay.
So Catholic Social Services facilitates that.
All right. I want to let you respond, Peter, because that sounds like a very extensive process. But your concern, I think you expressed earlier, is well, you're afraid that the information won't be available to really tell if the person is legit or not.
Well, that's right. None of what Margaret just gave us is unfamiliar to me. In fact, when I was putting that article together that you read, I specifically did the research to see what was being done. Because, it doesn't matter to me who the person is at all. I could care less about the religion or color and so on. But I did want to know, what are we doing to vet people before they're coming? And I came to the conclusion that was not enough. In my personal history, mostly when I was younger, as an enlisted man, and then later during a period of time when I was a captain, I was very much involved with the conduct of background investigations for U.S. Army people. Okay, and I did it from a number of different perspectives. I did it from the perspective of someone who knocked on the doors and interviewed people. I conducted 800 some on interviews or records checks. I personally closed 160 cases and then sent them to the place where they reviewed. And in fact, I spent 2 years of my military life doing nothing but reading dossier after dossier after dossier of people that were applying for security clearances. And then I was in a position later where I actually could make the decisions as whether or not they could get them. So I know it can be in a very extensive check. And what we do for our own people to get a secret background investigation, or more stringently, top secret, it's a lot more. It could take a very long time, and there's a whole bunch of leads conducted by people mostly on the ground, people who go out and interview.
But is that practical? I mean, when we're talking about...
No, that's the whole point. It is not practical to go out and interview not just the person who wants to come, but we don't have the opportunity to interview their friends, their teachers, their coworkers, the people they've worked for. We don't have the ability to go into Syria's database and see whether or not someone has a criminal record.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, it's just, you know.
And I do want to get to this caller, but you.
Yeah, just one more mm-hmm. quote. So I'm agreeing with FBI Director James Comey, who said in October at a congressional hearing, it's currently impossible to have a record of everyone in every country. He said, quote, "We can only query against that which we have collected. And so if someone has never made a ripple in the pond in Syria in a way that would get their identity or their interest reflected in our database, we can query our database until the cows come home. But nothing will show up because we have no record of that person."
All right. So let's move on to some callers. Brandon is calling from Anchorage. Brandon?
Yeah, hey, how are you doing? For both of your guests, I was also saddened this morning to hear there was another mass shooting in Southern California. But
I wasn't aware
of
that.
My question was, I don't understand what – it seems to me that we have a problem in this country labeling what is a terrorist act and what is a mass shooting. Seems like the last seven mass shootings we had – the FBI director came on and said, we don't yet know if this was an act of terror. Well, of course it was an act of terror, whether the person was from here or not. And it seems to me that the quote-unquote terrorists are already here. They're the so-called homegrown terrorists. All of the last 8-9 shootings we've had, I don't understand why they have to be born somewhere else or be an immigrant to be labeled a terrorist. I mean, it seems like we have a problem in this country with labeling things. And of course, if it comes out that this new shooting was perhaps people that weren't born in the United States and they weren't Christians, then that would be terrorism. But if they were homegrown terrorists, then it would just be another mass shooting. And I guess I feel like part of the problem with the terrorist attack in Paris obviously sparked this entire debate about immigration. But it seems like the terrorists are already here. They're born here.
Right. Thanks for bringing that point up. And just for listeners, San Bernardino shooting took 14 lives today. There are 14 injured. Police are looking for suspects. And I'm sure we'll have more details on All Things Considered this afternoon at 4 o'clock. Peter, do you want to address that? Are we looking at the right risk here? I mean, there's a lot of risks in our lives.
I'm sorry. Caller, I didn't catch your name.
He's gone.
You're gone. Okay. Well,
Brandon,
I'll speak about it, Brandon. Brandon was correct that terror is terror no matter who perpetrates it. Okay. From what I've heard so far on the radio today, it does sound like some kind of terrorist attack because there were three people they believe that were involved. So it's not one deranged person who decided to go off and start shooting by himself. So it does sound like something that was planned. We don't know who perpetrated it, but it was certainly terror. We don't know yet whether or not it was immigrants or refugees or just homegrown people that had some kind of chip on their shoulders. So it's certainly premature to make any conclusions other than to say that several bad people killed a lot of people that had no hadn't done anything to them. And mm-hmm. we just have to leave it at that until we know more.
Margaret, how do you feel about this?
Well, you know, I was in the military police for 28 years, and I unfortunately had to go to crime scenes, and eyewitness reports from the initial reports are often wrong. So I think everybody needs to, you know, withhold judgment until the police are able to actually get in there and figure out what happened. But I do recall 20 years ago, unfortunately and sadly, we did have a horrific act of domestic terrorism in the United States. Tim McVeigh mm-hmm. blew up the Oklahoma City Federal Building, killed more people than died in the Paris attacks. He was not a Muslim jihadist. He was an extremist, homegrown, and an Army veteran from Buffalo, New York. And, of course, the initial reports were that he was a Muslim and he had blown up the Oklahoma City Federal Building. And as a result of that, people acted in ways that they later regretted because of these initial erroneous reports. So I think, you know, generally speaking, you've got to withhold judgment until the police can get in there, they can do a crime scene analysis, they can figure out exactly what happened, and then you have to be rational about it. We are getting attacked today. I mean, there's wars going on all over the world right now. As I said at the beginning, there's more people being forced out of their homes worldwide than after World War II as refugees. We have terrible conflicts going on in the world, and the way that we protect ourselves is through intelligence. Reasoned intelligence, not by being xenophobic, but by considering the threat. How do we stop the threat? It's not by keeping everybody from a certain country or people from a certain religion out of the United States of America. It's by figuring out what the threat is, how they're targeting us. Travel is part of it. But ISIS is smart, and they figured out that our refugee system, they can't penetrate very easily. They figured out that we're probably cracking down on other means of travel for foreigners. So what are they doing? They're going over the internet and they're recruiting people who are disaffected mm-hmm. here in the United States.
Let me give out the phone number here so people who want to join us can do so. It's Hometown Alaska, and we have about 15 minutes left with Peter Goldberg, chair of the Alaska Republican Party, and Margaret Stock, who's an attorney with Cascadia Cross-Border Law Group. If you'd like to call in, the number here is 550-8433. 550-8433. Outside Anchorage, the number is 888-353-5752. And the email address is hometown@alaskapublic.org. And I would like to take another topic while we still have some time here and address it first to Margaret and then bring it over to you, Peter. That we're clearly have become a town with a pretty diverse immigrant population and very unsegregated schools where we have lots of different religions and nationalities represented. You work with immigrants all the time. Is this issue affecting them in terms of the welcome they feel in our community? Do you feel like a positive message is still going out from America and from Alaska in terms of how we feel respond to those folks? Or is that a problem? Is sort of the welcoming aspect being diminished in some way?
Well, I would hope we would continue to be welcoming. Anchorage has been a wonderfully welcoming and wonderfully diverse community with a lot of the value that diversity brings. One of the generals I used to work for at the Pentagon said, diversity is our strength, and he was absolutely right about that. That gets to the idea that we became a superpower by importing people from all over the world and bringing them together in one ideal that they can all be together and they can overcome their differences and work together as one. E pluribus unum, you know. I'm starting to get a little worried. I mean, it concerns me when political leaders, and there was one state legislator who said he wanted a halt to all immigration to Alaska, and I thought, wow, you know, the oil industry, we have workers from all over the world that have worked for us, Canadians, you don't want Canadians. We have charter school teachers out in the Matsu Valley who are, you know, here from foreign countries to teach Spanish, you know, Fronteras Immersion School. We have foreign students at our colleges and universities here that contribute money economically, and they, you know, they're graduating with degrees and going to work for us. And immigration has brought a tremendous vibrancy and economic power to our community. And to just say we're going to stop that because we're afraid makes no sense.
Mm-hmm. But we also, you know, the flip side, we, I don't, at least that I'm aware of, we're have not had a lot of racial incidents. I mean, there was one involving some Somali men last winter, which was really unfortunate. But for the most part, it seems like we have not like succumbed to fear in terms of being negative towards Muslims.
Well, I don't think we have. We haven't seen any actual incidents yet, mm-hmm. and I'm hoping that that'll be maintained and we won't have a mm-hmm. problem.
And Peter, how do you feel about that issue?
I want to jump in. In fact, mm-hmm. I would have said something about it even before, based on something that
I saw you were taking some notes there. Yeah.
Well, I just want to make sure I got my act together here. Mm-hmm. Look, when an act of terrorism or even a single act where one person is killed takes place, and even when we can unequivocally say that the person or persons that committed that act come from a specific ethnic group or religious group or racial group, or we can identify their country of origin, whether it's immediately in the past or several generations past, it is totally 100% improper for anybody in our society to impose retribution upon somebody else that happens to match that ethnic, religious, racial identity. Anyone who does that is wrong, perhaps much more wrong than the people who perpetrated the act in the first place.
Okay, good. Do you like Anchorage having this multinational, multicultural identity, which is kind of something that we've kind of adopted more recently? I mean, is that something that you are excited about or that you think is positive?
Oh, I'm totally comfortable with it. Like I said earlier, I grew up in Brooklyn. In Brooklyn, you can get any kind of ethnic food you want. Okay, mm-hmm. and you get lots of different perspectives. In many ways, I'd like to see many more ethnic groups. I've never been just a meat and potatoes person. And, you know, I know I'm concentrating on food, but I really love to eat. Okay, there's some really good restaurants in this town from some good people. And when I can, I try and learn about them. I really appreciate, in particular, having Polynesian groups here mm-hmm. and so on.
Are you concerned at all, I mean, in terms of the Republican presidential primary, so the immigration has become a very sort of a key issue, a central issue, and some of the candidates have made comments that a lot of Hispanics or other immigrants view as being really offensive or, you know, and I'm thinking particularly of Donald Trump talking about, you know, Mexicans are rapists and making these kind of remarks. I mean, as a leader of your party, how do you feel about those kinds of things? Do you think that has gotten out of line?
Well, first of all, because there's a primary season going on right mm-hmm. now, it would be inappropriate for me to comment on any given candidate.
Okay. But what about the overall tenor of it?
The overall tenor, there are some that are making comments that are more emotional than others. Mm-hmm. I want to choose my words real careful here. And there are people in various elements of our society that come from a different ethnic, racial, religious group and so on that are offended. But there are also some from those same groups that are supportive of that kind of comment. But I think if we're going to start talking about, you know, our illegal immigration or undocumented alien problem, that's almost a totally different topic that we could spend another hour or two on.
For sure. Yeah. All right. Now, let's go to another caller. Rebecca's calling in from Anchorage. Rebecca?
Hi. Thanks for taking my call. I just wanted to say that, like many of the callers today and Ms. Stock, too, it's scares me, and it saddens me greatly when we let fear overtake us. Anchorage is a wonderful community full of people from all around the world, and I feel like my life, my family's life, is so much richer because of it. And we are real supportive of Bridge Builders, and Bridge Builders has this goal of, you know, making sure that we're the first community without racism, and we come together and really learn from each other, and it's a wonderful experience. And so when we become afraid of something, then, you know, it blocks us from really benefiting from all the richness that we have around us. And that's it.
Okay. Thanks, Rebecca. Good comment. So in terms of the process we have now, I guess our two guests feel one feels it's very thorough. The other feels that it's probably not thorough enough. Is that all we're talking about, do you think, Margaret? I mean, just a process?
Well, I'm not sure what Peter would do differently. I'm familiar with the single-scope background investigation process that he's talking about, and that's full of holes. you know, I deal with that every day, and it's completed by contractors, and we get people who come into the military who pass that, who, you know, are security threats. So I guess I'd like to hear from Peter what he thinks he would do differently to screen these refugees. I mean, they sit in a camp usually overseas for 18 months to 3 years. They're observed while they're in the camp. They talk to their relatives that are in the camp with them. They quiz them thoroughly. You know, they interview them about their views on politics.
I guess it strikes me, Peter. I mean, the person, if it takes years and years to get here, it'd be a really inefficient way for a terrorist to get to the U.S.
It is. It's extremely inefficient.
Yes?
Well, I suppose the person would really have to be dedicated to the process. To ask me what I would do differently, mm-hmm. I'm not sure that there is anything we can do differently. And that's why I would put, at least for some groups of people, their movement here on hold.
All right. Let's go to Nick calling from Anchorage. Nick?
Yeah, I was just had a question for Margaret. Earlier you said that someone stated that they wanted all immigration to Alaska to be stopped. And you started talking about immigrants we have working in the Mat-Su. I'm just curious if you know if these immigrants working in the Mat-Su are illegal immigrants or undocumented, or are they refugees, or if they came through here the correct way through our legal system.
No, they're perfectly legal, but the legislator, who happens to be a Mat-Su Valley legislator, wanted all citizenship stopped, all immigration stopped.
Do you know what the ratio is between illegal immigrants and how many immigrants are coming through legally? Do you know the ratio?
Oh, the vast majority of immigrants in Alaska are perfectly legal. We have a very, very tiny population of unauthorized immigration, mainly because you have to get on an airplane to get here for the most part.
Well, do you think that we should crack down on the illegal immigrants before we continue to let refugees into our state?
Well, we have cracked down. The federal government deports them.
Okay. So, all right. That's my only question, ma'am. Thank you.
All right. Thanks, Nick. Let's go to Rick, calling from Anchorage. Rick?
Hey, thanks for squeezing me in here at the end of the program.
Yeah, really quick, please.
I had to call back. You had asked about some of Donald Trump's comments and things, and your guest, Peter, there, you know, to be politically correct, didn't want to comment because of we're in a political, you know, era, you know, with the votes coming up. But that is part of our problem is, you know, you can't take ridiculously racist, comments and then go, oh, I don't want to say anything because he's in my party and he's running. I mean, that is totally ridiculous. You know, if we can't ignore party labels and recognize blatant racism.
Peter's role is actually as chairman of the party, so I think that's where he's coming from.
I'm chairman of the party. I need to remain neutral until we select a candidate. You know, I no one knows who I'm supporting for this nomination. Not even my wife knows who I'm supporting. Right now, simply based on the polls and nothing else, Donald Trump looks like he would be the nominee. And if he becomes a nominee, it's my job to carry Alaska for him.
All right.
So I won't comment on any candidate.
Thanks, Rick. Your point is well taken about condemning racism, and Peter has done that earlier in the show. I want to thank both of my guests, quite the hot seat, but really interesting discussion. Peter Goldberg, chair of the Alaska Republican Party. Margaret Stock is an attorney with the Cascadia Cross Border Law Group. Dave Waldron is our audio engineer. Pat Yak is the chief content officer for Alaska Public Media. Next week, your host is going to be Kathleen McCoy with a show on school finance, part of our series on education in Anchorage. My name is Charles Wolforth. Thanks for being with us on Hometown Alaska.
Hometown Alaska is a production of Alaska Public Media, which is solely responsible for its content. Views expressed are those of the host and participants and do not reflect the underwriters or KSKA. Hometown Alaska's theme song, Lead Dog, is by Kevin Barnett from Eagle River. Learn more about Hometown Alaska and listen online at alaskapublic.org. Life informed. This is Alaska Public Media.